This is a podcast devoted to your San Francisco Giants.
The ball game is over. The series is over. The Giants are heading to Philadelphia for the National League Championship Series.
If you're sick of the East Coast bias, this podcast is for you.
Strike three, called! A cutter on the outside corner at the knees. The ball game is over, and the Giants have won the National League pennant.
With your hosts, Willie Dills, Mike G., and Ben Lee.
Swing and a miss, and that's it! The Giants are world champions as they come pouring out of the dugout, circling Brian Wilson, the bullpen, flying in from left center field, dancing, hugging, and celebrating for all you Giants fans, wherever you are, this party is just getting started.
Don't forget your glove, grab some pine, and settle in. This is Torture Cast.
Welcome everybody to the Torture Cast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco, not the New York Giants, because actually we are not fans of the New York Giants right now. My name is Willie Dills, and this is episode 17, I believe. Is that right? It's January 22nd of 2012, and I'm joined by longtime co-host and good friend of mine, Ben Lee. Ben Lee, what's going on? Welcome to the show.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. Let's move on and welcome the newest addition to the TortureCast family, and we're really excited to have him on. He's been on the show before, and he's contributed content to us. So if you listen to the show, you know exactly who this is. This is Chad King. What's up, Chad? How's it going, man?
I don't wear number 10. I know I'm the new guy. I promise not to fumble the ball tonight.
All right. And also, if it's bouncing towards you, just move out of the way, okay? Just fair warning.
I'll do that.
Okay,
do that.
Good. So we're really glad to have you on the show. We've been talking about, you know, how you were one of the most vocal and participatory fans we'd had so far, and you've given us a lot of great content with your out of left field stuff. And you know, as we were talking in the Torture Cast off season, which it kind of turned out to be, we figured, you know, it'd be great to have you on, and hopefully we'll still get Mike in here as often as possible. But I think you'll make a great addition and help us fill in and make sure that we never miss days, never miss weeks, you know?
No, thanks for the invite, guys. I really do appreciate it. I mean, you know, the guys, the work that you guys have been doing has been fantastic. It's kind of funny that, you know, a Giants podcast really didn't exist until you and Giants Pod kind of showed up. When you really look at the landscape of podcasting, it's kind of surprising. But
it is.
I promise that I won't test positive. I will use the cream and the clear, and everything
That's
will be
good,
okay.
Because we're not doing this 50-game suspension thing that the A's are apparently after. So did anybody else hear about that? The A's apparently going after Manny Ramirez. So I was like, for what? So that you can suddenly be like, hey, guess what? 50 games in the season. Maybe we'll start selling tickets again when everybody goes, Manny's coming in.
Well, that, you know, that's
like
actually
a circus act.
Kind of an interesting question that I'd heard people posed was, should the Giants pick up Manny?
For what?
Well, just for anybody who can hit a ball. But, you know, I mean, I didn't think it was worth it to us, especially considering our history. And, you know, the last guy we had who people like to talk about the steroid situation with, I just didn't think it was a good fit. So,
yeah,
also,
but see,
I don't really like the
with
guy.
With him, he didn't really carry the steroid situation in with him, and we liked him beforehand. With Manny Ramirez, most people already don't like him, and he's bringing the situation in with him, and those two don't really fit together well.
And let's imagine him just for a moment playing left field in San Francisco and just jogging after a ball.
I also don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, just jogging after a ball or just kind of lollygagging around, and I just feel like people they won't put up with it here. We kind of put up with some of that stuff with Barry, but people would boo Barry. I mean, I don't know if you guys remember, like, people really didn't like that stuff. If he lollygagged after a ball, he would hear it. And even when he was, like, hitting a ton of home runs and everyone was bowing to him and all that stuff, I mean, people would still talk a lot of smack about that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of, you know, conversation I always heard from fans in the stands and just things I heard. You know, he hits a routine ground ball, but the problem is that sometimes those routine, quote unquote, ground balls are, you know, up the middle or in the hole. And, you know, a middle infielder is backhanding it and throwing off their back foot and throwing off a jogging Barry by a step. And it's like, well, damn, if you ran a little harder, that would have been an infield single.
Exactly. And the thing is, like, you could kind of take it because of how damn amazing he was at the plate during those years, but I can remember several times wanting to pull my hair out watching that. So I don't know if that's what we need. I think our team is not one that should be built around a prima donna steroid taking home run hitter anymore.
We're not really suited for a ton of power anymore anyway. I mean, the closest we're getting to having a power arm is pretty much what, Huff and Posey?
Well, I mean, yeah. But the thing is, even those guys, like, those guys are 20 home run guys. And even if we have, I mean, what was the streak last? I think, Chad, we did the show when we had that streak of solo home runs. I mean, that's the Giants. We don't get guys on base to begin with, so.
Yeah, it was like 20 or something like that, 19
was
or 20?
Out of control, yeah.
It was insane. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was when we were hitting home runs. So when you look back on that, sometimes it's even more significant because you're like, wow, we hit that many home runs?
Over a span of quite a few games, though.
Yeah, 40 games or something. Yeah. I mean, yeah, they'd hit a home run every other game, and they all just all happened to be solo shots because no one got on base in front of them.
Yeah,
so.
No one, like, that's been my biggest beef with the Giants for so long, and people have heard me talk about it on the show.
Man,
it's like,
my point
guys,
still
stands. Take a walk, please. Oh, my God. But anyway, let's talk about the 49ers just for a second. Because
just get it out of our system.
It just happened.
Sooner or later.
Yeah, it just happened. Now, before I start going down the path of sadness and depression, let me just say that nobody expected the Giants to be in the NFC Championship game, period, or the Niners to be in the NFC Championship
probably
game,
period.
Probably
the Giants,
period.
Too, actually.
No, yeah, probably not the Giants either, yeah.
True.
But, you know, with Harbaugh in his first season, Alex Smith at the helm, I don't think anybody expected them to go as far as they did. You got to feel pretty proud. Beating the Saints in a magical game was pretty fantastic.
Holding it as close as they did, you know, yeah. The offensive lackings aside, I mean, the fact remains, this was a really close game.
Yeah,
it was exciting. I was hoping that it wouldn't be a blowout. It wasn't. I mean, I was hoping we'd win, but I didn't want us to look really stupid on national TV, and we came out looking pretty damn good.
I just think, you know, for it to take two pretty bad special teams blunders for us to lose the game says kind of a lot about the team, because our defense bailed us out, I don't know, six or seven times there at the end of the game when our offense couldn't even get a field goal to win the game. So. And I know, Chad, you're a longtime Niners fan as well. You know, let's talk about the good things we can take away from this. One, we're going to keep our perfect record in the Super Bowl, no matter what. Right?
Silver lining, baby.
There you go.
We cannot possibly lose the Super Bowl now, guys.
No, we're not going to lose the Super Bowl. But two, is that, you know, we kind of shocked the world, and as down as they'll be this year, I feel like it was almost a little too easy if we just get back into the Super Bowl just like that. Like, after, you know, Harbaugh comes in one season, all of a sudden, boom. Like, I feel like the guys will be hungry because now they've had a taste, you know?
And in fairness, the San Francisco Giants did it, but all right.
Yeah,
I guess that's too much good karma for one team, one city in 2 years. So
we didn't have people who'd been in the playoffs. You know what I mean?
Right. It's hard because they were so close. And at the beginning of the year, obviously, if you had told me that the Niners would be hosting the NFC Championship game, they'd go to overtime and lose on a crushing play, I'd think you are absolutely loony. But the reality is, once you're in that situation, you realize how close they really were. And it wasn't like one of those games where, it was a back and forth game, but it wasn't a game where it was like, oh, well, you know, the better team just grinded it out better and just tip your hat to their performance. I mean, it really did come down to a backup special teams guy making two massive mistakes that gave up 10 points, and they only scored 20. I mean, that was the difference in the game, plain and simple.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you take away the first mistake, we don't even go to overtime, you know?
Exactly.
So it's just one of those situations where you can't – this is why you have to play football. This is why you can't just go, you know, oh, one team is better than the other team. You got to get out there because at any given moment – and even when he fumbled the ball, I'm thinking – well, the Niners have been the best team all year at stripping the ball. I was surprised the Giants even ran any plays. I was surprised they didn't just kick a field goal, given that fact, you know. But we were even still thinking, like, anything can happen. And this is why, you watch the Saints game again. If you ever want to watch a game where anything can happen, think about scoring four touchdowns in the last 4 minutes of a game, but back and forth like that. And just, it's, you know, anything, it's unbelievable what playoff football does. And I got to say that a lot of guys on the Niners got a taste of it that did not have it before. I mean, you look down the roster, you look at all these guys like Frank Gore, Alex Smith, Davis, you know, like none of these guys had been in the playoffs, period, because they've been on the Niners for so long. And so it's great that they at least got a taste of that and at least got to play a couple games, not just one and out.
To me, I'm not going to say it's a 54-year drought like the San Francisco Giants had, but it really did kind of give me that feeling of 2002 in the World Series, because it wasn't that they had a 5-run lead in the sixth or seventh inning and, you know, the clinching game. It wasn't maybe quite that dominant, but they really were that close. They really were that close to at least going to the Super Bowl. And it kind of reminded me back in 91 when Roger Craig, the Niners needed one more first down against the New York Giants in that championship game. And they were, you know, they had to run the ball. They couldn't just down it.
Yeah.
But Roger Craig went up in the middle and the nose tackle for the Giants. Yeah. Fumbled the ball. You know, got his helmet in there. And obviously, you know, that was devastating. And the Giants went down and kicked the field goal, much like tonight, and won the game. And then I found out later that the nose tackle for the Giants went to my high school.
Oh, wow.
As well.
Oh,
so it just kind of was like pouring salt in the wound. But
he wasn't ready for that.
Kind of reminded me of that game. Funny story, though. My wife, actually, in the previous company, Silicon Valley here, she actually worked with Roger Craig. He did a lot of promotions. He worked there full time. He still does, actually. And so they were like emailing and tweeting back and forth, and they worked together. And I was like, should I be worried?
Should I be worried that you're talking to Roger Craig, who's done underwear commercials? Yeah.
And so anyway...
I don't feel comfortable. I'm afraid he's going to make a sudden catch and run.
Yeah, I was like, oh, boy, he could be all greased up at lunch.
He's a high stepper, too, man. You got to watch those guys.
But actually, we went to lunch with him one day after, I guess my daughter was about 18 months or whatever. And so we went to this Thai place or whatever. No, it's Cuban. Sorry, we got Cuban sandwiches.
It's kind of the same thing, you know.
It was about an hour lunch, and, you know, it was pretty cool to be able to talk to him for, I mean, an hour. And I mean, he was a real nice guy, real gracious and the whole thing. And I really wanted to bring up that fumble. Just I know that would have been shooting myself in the foot, you know, and throwing like salt in his eyes. But my God, I just it bugged me so much. And so tonight really, really reminded me of that feeling that I had, 20 years ago, actually. God, 21 years
ago?
That's
pretty crazy to think that it's that long. Yeah, it's crazy to think. I mean, you think about like 81, the Niners won their first Super Bowl, and that's 31 years. That's crazy.
That was their first. And I mean, they've had a little bit more of a track record of success in that area than the San Francisco Giants have. So,
well, the San Francisco Giants, yes.
This is going to be rough. I'm going to spend all night having to say San Francisco Giants, because for tonight I'm going to have to distinguish between one and the other all the time.
You know, what's funny is I was wearing a Giants sweater tonight, or sweatshirt, and it doesn't say San Francisco on anywhere. It just says Giants, you know. But
yeah, but it should be obvious which one it is, because
I mean it is. But still, blue. I was like, and at some point I looked down and I was like, I should take this off. I mean, I know that it's pretty clear, but I'm wearing a sweatshirt that says Giants, and I'm rooting so hard against the Giants. But it was a brutal.
Weren't they named for the original baseball team though?
Well, at that one time, both teams played in New York, right? So, but that was before, because the NFL was. The AFL? What was the NFL before it was the NFL? Like, they basically had a bunch of random leagues or whatever, right, for a little while, and then that was pre-Super Bowl era. Because the Giants, San Francisco Giants, moved out here in 51, right? And
54 or 6, yeah.
Well, 56. Why am I blanking out? It was 56, after,
54 was the last one. Yeah.
Right.
Oh, 54 was the World Series. Then we move out like, two years later.
56, 57, exactly.
So they move out here. That's pre-Super Bowl era. So there wasn't even, you know, the NFL as we know it today at that time. But yeah, there was both teams. It was just the Giants were the New York team. They've stuck around for a while. And of course, the real Giants are now here. So in your face, New York Giants, you suck.
I know we don't want to spend too much time on the Niners. This is a Giants podcast.
It's true.
San Francisco Giants podcast.
Yes.
Right. Just to be clear there for any New York fans. I did see a tweet by the Giants pod. They had retweeted or taken a picture of a search for Kyle Williams' Twitter handle. I feel sorry for that guy. The profanity and the subterranean human culture that comes out on Twitter from the anonymity of the things that they are saying on the internet about that guy. I mean, it's just, I feel sorry for him. It's like, yeah, as a Niner fan, I mean, obviously I'm upset that he made two massive mistakes that handed the game But it's, you know, it's football. It's a game. It's, you know, life moves on and people are, you know, life and calling them names that should never be repeated anywhere. I mean, it's just, it's sad. It's really, really sad. And unfortunately, because he is not a star with the Niners, like Roger Craig, he fumbled that ball. People were pretty hard up on him, but you know, he had done so much.
Exactly.
Yeah. They forgive him. Exactly. He'd done so much more good for the team than the one mistake he made. This guy's a backup special teams guy.
Oh man.
I can't imagine him even making the cut next year.
He's probably, here's the thing, it's kind of what happens is, this is like a kicker who misses. This is like what's his name for the Ravens,
like Cundiff,
he's gonna be gone next year, and it doesn't really matter if he's, you know, I mean, he's kind of a middle of the road kicker. It's not like he's fantastic or horrible, but when you miss that kick, you gotta go, you know what I mean? Like, because the city's not gonna forgive you.
It's just, there's just gonna be such a stigma on you next year. Like, I mean, someone will take a chance on him, but it's not gonna be Baltimore.
Exactly. Another team will pick him up, and he'll be fine, you know. And like, he'll go that, and they'll, you know, he could have a great season with another team. It doesn't matter. But yeah, Kyle Williams will have to go to another team, I think, next year, just for his own sanity. I think it'll be better for him anyway.
He'll kind of be the sacrificial goat, and I mean, I'm sure that it's going to be hard for him to stick around here as it is. Yeah,
he made a lot of rookie mistakes though throughout the season, and you could kind of see that he was inexperienced. I mean, do you guys remember the game? Was it the Saints game, or maybe it was one of the final games of the regular season when he fell, he slipped to the ground, and then this was in the regular season. Rather than just lie on the ground and cover up, he basically dropped the ball and then stood up on his knees and then got sandwiched by two guys, right? That was him, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then he got a concussion and was knocked out. But that was one of those things where it's like, you do realize what's going on around you, right? Like, you don't, the play's not over just because you fell down. Nobody had touched him. And, you know, even though the play ended up being called that, you know, since he wasn't trying to progress the ball anymore, the play was dead. But, you know, he got demolished. And, you know, that shows an experience of, people are coming at you full speed. They can't even find the ball sometimes. They don't know that you're down. You know, they don't know that that you've decided not to run anymore. So they're going to hit you. And, you know, you look at that situation, this game today, where he just didn't get out of the way of the ball and then not covering the ball up on that final play. It just showed his inexperience. And it's not like he wasn't trying to win the game. So I'm not going to throw him under the bus. And Ashcon's actually posting a lot of Twitter stuff about it, too. You know, he posted, let me see if I can find one of these here. It's one thing to want him cut. This is from Ashcon. It's one thing to want him cut and to be mad at him. It's another thing to wish him hurt or take to Twitter to call him a loser. And I agree with that. Guy's got to go, but I'm not going to say that he's, you know, a bad person and I hope he dies or anything like
that. Yeah, I mean, this is like being Brooks Conrad after the NLDS in 2010. Yeah. Like, nobody, you shouldn't, I mean, Brooks Conrad is probably a great guy, like, from everything I've heard, you know.
But, I love Brooks Conrad, yeah.
But, you know, he's
a fantastic individual in my eyes.
Well, but then see, that's the problem. You know what they're saying in New York right now is the
exactly.
same thing.
They're so like, we love Kyle Williams. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, let's talk about the Giants. It was a bitter pill to swallow today. But, you know, we'll move on. Next season will come around. And the Niners look like a much better team than they have in the past. So we got to feel good about that. A couple quick things. We'll just talk about some of the stuff that's been going on as far as contracts and stuff. We won't spend too much time on all this, but Cabrera retiring at the age of 37. Did we really expect it? Did anybody expect him to come back to the Giants?
Is this part where we say Orlando Cabrera retires as a Giant and pretend to be dramatic about it? Because I'm gonna, I'm pretending to be excited.
Well, now, when he goes into the Hall of Fame,
Who are you talking about?
Orlando Cabrera. He had about 15 at bats for us last season. No, Orlando Cabrera, when he goes into the Hall of Fame, he's gonna have a Giants hat on. Do you realize that? So yeah, he's retired.
First ballot,
37.
First ballot, done.
First ballot Hall of Famer. Did anybody, like Chad, did you expect him to come back? Did you think he had a place on this team this year?
No, not at all. Especially with the young talent, I didn't think so. He didn't prove that he had anything really left in the tank last year. No. You know, coming in at 37, 38 years old, hitting 240. I mean, you know, Crawford and those guys can hit just as well, and their defense is better. So, you know, why?
Yeah, it's pretty much a no-brainer at this point that we weren't going to pick him up. And, you know, I think if we weren't going to, I don't know if there's a lot of interest out there for a guy who's, 37 years old and just basically a weak hitting, kind of slow moving, every man shortstop at this point, you know.
It's so interesting, though, because Cabrera was such the last piece you need for so many years. He went through like five teams in 2 years because everybody's like, no, we need Orlando Cabrera. And, nobody really did.
No, no, nobody really did. So yeah, goodbye, Orlando. Thank you for playing, you know, half a year with us. That was fantastic of you to do that. But he's gone. He's done. Let's talk about some of the arbitration people that we picked up. We got contracts for them now. So a couple of these, I didn't really realize that, you know, we still had to sign Cabrera and Pagan, you know, guys that we had traded for. I guess I just kind of missed that.
We didn't have to sign them per se. They're still under team control, mm-hmm. but so we would have had them regardless.
They just didn't have actual, you know, contract and amounts in place yet. Okay.
Right. Because of the way that the arbitration ruling works, we had to agree on a set amount for them for the year. So we would have had Pagan regardless, but now we have Pagan at an agreed price as opposed to having to go to a nasty hearing or having to compare sides or having disagreements on how much.
Right.
We came to an agreement with him on how much we were going to pay him for the year.
Okay. So we gave Cabrera 6 and we gave Pagan 4.85. 6 is, you know, it's a little bit. It's a little bit of money.
For the year Cabrera had last year, I kind of get it.
Yeah, it's one year, so we're not locked in or anything like that, which, you know, it means right. that if he does well and we decide that we want to keep him, or same thing with Pagan, 4.85, it's like, you know, we kind of give ourselves a little wiggle room. And I think we know that within a couple of years here, we're going to see a very different Giants team. Things are going to change drastically within a couple of years, I think. So I don't think they paid too much or too little. I think that's about right. Actually, looking at these numbers, I don't think there's anybody we really overpaid for. So Casilla, $2.2 million. I actually think that's pretty fair. He's mm-hmm. a quality pitcher, quality arm out of the bullpen, throws
really
hard.
We had some really good Casilla moments last year besides just the throwing at a potted plant, one at bat.
Oh, dude, his at bat was amazing. Best at bat of the year.
Come on. Casilla's got a 1.00 on base percentage for us. Like, you can't turn down that kind of bat.
That's true.
Well, I think he probably would have had $2.1 million if he
yeah, exactly.
had a bat last year.
That was an incentive that was thrown in. They were like, if you have 1,000 on base percentage, yeah.
One plate appearance and or more, and you'll receive an additional $100,000.
So Fontenot at pretty much $1 million for the year. So that's about right for him. You know, he's going to be a backup all season long and then step in when Sanchez gets hurt, right? That's pretty much what's going to happen.
Pretty inevitably.
Yeah. He's going to play half the year.
Yeah.
He'll platoon Burris somewhere, you know.
And then Sheerholtz at 1.3, which he's got to feel okay about that, like actually getting paid a little bit of money because he hasn't really made a lot of money his whole career. And I feel like he's going to get a lot of at-bats this year. I feel like Sheerholtz is... I think he's going to be the guy in right field pretty much all season long unless he gets hurt.
Which is nice. I mean, Sheerholtz was kind of Brandon Belt before Brandon Belt was Brandon Belt. You know, everybody was talking about, let's bring up Nate. Where's Nate? Can we get Nate? And it was like, when we finally got him, he would show these flashes of being everything he was cracked up to be. So it's kind of nice to see us actually putting some confidence and or $1 million into him.
Yeah, and I recommend everybody check out torturecast.com because Chad actually wrote a pretty good little breakdown of our outfield. And Sheerholtz being one of them. And the fact that, you know, our outfield's not necessarily a big selling point for our team this year, necessarily.
Oh, my God, I have to go to the game so I can see Melky Cabrera play. That's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have his likeness, you know, his silhouette plastered onto the left field wall. You know,
you think
just
they're
like
change,
Bonds had.
They're going to change the right field wall. They're going to say, look, it was 24 feet tall, but we're going to rename it Sheerholtz Wall. And, here's the thing, though. He's great defensively.
Nobody reads that wall like Sheerholtz does.
Yeah, absolutely. Great defensively, and to have him play right field all season long, I think there's going to be at least maybe two or three games he's going to win with his arm out there because he's going to throw somebody out and preserve, you know, especially for the Giants. We're going to have a lot of close games, you know, just like mm-hmm. we always do. So, you know, think about somebody who can make, you know, 10 to 15 outfield assists a year and how that's going to help out the team. So there you go. He's number 12, right? So they're just going to knock that wall down in half. I think that works.
Right.
Yeah.
What I'm thinking is that they put like a howitzer up on the top, and then every time you throw somebody out, they say something about the cannon and then fire it.
Then fire the cannon off?
Ooh,
that'd be rad.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I'm into it.
I mean, you know, you take out a car parked somewhere near McCovey Cove every time you do it, but, you know, that's worth the price, right?
So. Oh, you're talking about firing a real cannonball.
Well, you know, we're for Mythbusters. I don't see why, you know, they're local guys. We can get them to fire the cannon.
All right. Vogelsong, we talked about a little bit last show. 2 years, $8.3 million. That's quite a bit of dough for that guy.
Option for his third year as well, with $6.5 million for the third year if we decide to go that route, and $300,000 for a buyout, which really isn't so bad. I mean, if we decide that doesn't work out, that's $0.3 million sunk into that, and he gets a chance to find sync with another team if we don't end up liking him for 2 years.
Yeah, but you know what, guys? I want to know that I want to work. I can work at a job in which they say, you know, Chad, you're just not really performing up to our standards. So here's $300,000.
$300K. See you later.
So you don't work for us anymore.
Well, that's like the ultimate in severance. Pay is, it's like we're writing severance pay into your contract in advance. If we don't like you after 2 years, here's some money, go play with someone else's toys. Like,
he'll be 36 at that point though, so you know he won't get another big contract somewhere else. So take that $300K and maybe pick up, you know, $1 million from another team or something at that point, depending on how well he's done. You never know. He could have two fantastic years though.
Come on, guys. Nothing says that Ryan Vogelsong can't be the next Jamie Moyer.
Okay, sure. Go ahead and tell he's 45 years old. Why not?
Well, come on. Isn't somebody, like, aren't people looking at Jamie Moyer right now? I mean, dude just had surgery again, and they're looking like, hey, you know, maybe we're going to sign Jamie Moyer. Weren't, like, the Rockies looking at him for a minute?
Really?
Well, I mean, the Rockies are kind of scraping the barrel here. But
seriously, that's wow. That's like you're looking at the floor outside the barrel, trying to see if anything. No,
that's we're trying to see whether the barrel has leaked.
Oh my God! All right, and then Sandoval is probably the last big guy that we could really talk about. So 3 years, 17.15. I think it's right. I think considering the year he had last year and the amount of work he's done for us now, and of course, you know, 3 years ago, I guess it is now. He's definitely shown that he's got the potential to be a premier third baseman. It really just depends on what he does, you know. So now the hope is that he doesn't go, oh, I've got 3 years at 17 mil. I'm a rich man. Don't need to do Camp Panda anymore. But I don't think I feel like he's just a guy who loves baseball so much and he wants to be good at it. I feel good about this move, you know?
And think about it, too. You know, if he takes the next 3 years and he puts up numbers like he did last year, like does that kind of numbers for all 3 years of his contract, he makes Jose Reyes money the next time that he has a contract to sign.
And last year, how many games did he miss? He missed what, a month and a half?
45?
Okay.
Something like that?
Something like a month and a half, right?
Yeah, he played 117 games last year.
Okay,
So, I mean, look at that. You know, the numbers that he put up in 117, if he can do, let's say, 140 games, 135 to 140 games in the next 3 years and puts up those kind of numbers every time, then that's the thing. Like, the inconsistency, that 2010 year is what keeps him right now from getting a bigger contract, is that tendency he has to kind of come up and go down. If he can solidify that in the next 3 years, he gets Jose Reyes money at least.
Well, he hasn't, not, you know. He hasn't, it's not a big enough sample size, really, to even say, like, he's Aubrey Huff or something like that, where it's like good year, bad year, good year.
Right, but he also just, because he didn't put up those solid numbers all 3 years, that's what prevents you from getting more for him. That's the way that we're doing with guys like Lincecum or Kane right now, where it's like there's proven track record of consistency. With Sandoval, it's when he's on, he's crazy on, but because there was that 1 year where it was like, meh, it's hard to justify a higher contract, and that's what prevents him from getting more money right now, I feel like.
Yeah, plus I don't think we want to give a giant contract to anybody really right now except for Lincecum. You know what
well,
I mean?
We should be a little terrified of giant contracts because we've got a couple of those on the payroll already and they're just kind of sitting there taking up space.
Yeah, this isn't one that's going to break. This isn't one that's going to cause us not to be able to get guys in 3 years. You know what I mean? And that's the big thing.
It might work out better for the Giants, the fact that he had an off year in 2010, because, look, he had an off year in 2010, and they won the World Series, so obviously him having an off year didn't affect anything.
Worked out.
But it may have actually reduced his market value to where the Giants could have signed him for basically $6 million a year right now, as opposed to $10 or $12 million a year.
Exactly.
If he had, you know, a stellar year in 2010, so it actually might work out better for the Giants.
Yeah, no.
It's a shame, you know? That's
he had
money
a double,
we could
though.
Use to re-sign Orlando Cabrera, guys. Come on.
He had one double in 2010 that helped us win a World Series. And that, to me, like that was like, I don't care what else he did that year. That friggin' at-bat in Philadelphia in Game 4,
he hit two doubles, remember that?
Yeah, that's right. He hit the double down the right field line, and then they said, no, that's foul. And then he came up and he sliced one back down right center. Fantastic. Oh, God, I love that at-bat. All right, so... other than that, there's nothing else major going on here. We talked about Sheerholtz, Casilla, Romo finally signed too for a fairly small amount of money.
Romo was one of our last two holdouts.
How goddamn good he was!
I have a question for you guys.
Sure.
To me, Romo is more valuable than Casilla.
Yes, I agree.
Why is Casilla 2.2 and Romo is it just their service?
Romo
years?
Is also younger than Casilla. Yeah. Romo sure. is still in one of his early arbitration years. Yeah. Like he's only been in the league for a few years, and so this is kind of. I think this might be. Is this his first year doing arbitration?
I think so. Yeah.
I just pulled up a sheet on him. Yeah, this is Romo's first time going through arbitration. So he got quite a salary raise. He got $450K last year, and right. so it only goes up from here if he stays this good. I mean, I don't know that it goes a whole lot higher because he is still a reliever, and short of going to an actual closer role, which unfortunately, you know, I don't know if I agree with the mentality of the closer, but the fact remains the closers are the relievers that get the big bucks. So unless Romo becomes a closer, I don't see him making much higher than like Jeremy Affeldt money for the most part, you know. Like,
but this is equivalent to
still a significant raise over what he's got now, but it's gonna, you know, this is his first arb year. We have 2 more years with him after this before he even has the potential to become a free agent, and that's assuming we don't lock him up. So
this is like when Lincecum won a Cy Young for us and made $600,000.
Yep.
This basically. Is like this guy was so damn good last year. I mean, he had what it was like a game and a half perfect or whatever of his
his 31 outings. Consecutive batters.
Yeah. I mean, it was unbelievable how on point he was towards the end of the year. And it was like, you know, he was just untouchable. He was absolutely untouchable. And the one thing about him is he has a tendency to hang a slider periodically and give up a home run. But besides that, it's like you can't hit the guy. You just can't do it. So
yeah, I mean, Lincecum's a little home run prone too, just because he was, you know, he threw so fast when he first came up that you just all you really had to do was connect with that hard enough, and the amount of momentum involved was going to carry the ball out. But he was such a good pitcher for the most part that when he would give up a home run, you're just kind of like, well, you know, that's what it is.
Well, his cool. deal, too, was that he – my problem with Lincecum and getting as much money as he's asking for okay, let's talk about Lincecum. Let's go ahead and go for it.
Let's get on to that.
So the arbitration, this is the second time we've dealt with arbitration and Tim Lincecum. The first time they were first time around, they were $5 million apart, right? Now they're $4.5 million. Like everyone's making a big deal about that. Like it's so much closer, you know. It's really not that much closer. But the fact remains, this is like the largest numbers anyone's ever dealt with in arbitration before. And I gotta say this, as good. Okay, so Lincecum, 2 Cy Youngs. You can't really deny that, right? You can't like say,
right.
Hey, you know, whatever. You don't have 2 Cy Youngs, even though the second one may be a little bit suspect in the fact that it was kind of maybe a little bit of a reputation thing at that point. But you know, he did have a good enough season to be considered and to win without, you know, too much argument. But the fact is, I feel like he's got a big glaring hole that I think doesn't quite make him premier, you know. He is premier in a lot of ways, but the guy has to get better at holding runners on. He just has to. And we were talking about, like, what a player's worth as far as winning games, like, this is one thing I think the Giants need to bring up in arbitration. Like, buddy, you got to get better at this one facet of your game. Everything else is so good. And this one thing, I mean, there's times when, you know, he let the other team run him out of the game, basically, because he couldn't hold a runner on first base, period. And to me, it's like he fixes that hole. He's like an unstoppable pitcher, you know, because he's just got so much action on that changeup. And he's just got, like, the ability to compete. That just brings him, but it's like this one thing he just doesn't do. And I'm like saying, how can you get, you know, how can you make this much money with this big of a glaring hole? And so someone talked me down off this ledge because I love the guy. I love him. Please.
I feel like with the thing with Lincecum and a lot of these guys that come up throwing hard is that for most of
their
careers.
But he doesn't throw that hard, though. Right now he throws 93, 94 at
the
most.
When he came up, he was touching 97 on a regular basis. And it's just, you know, over time and over use and over other things. But he's a lot of guys who are like that, who are such, you know, strikeout champs and things like that, I feel like they get this overconfidence of like, well, it doesn't matter if the guy gets on base because I'm not going to allow almost anybody on base anyway. Like he gets on base and you just kind of go, that's cool, I'll just strike out the next guy. And he's getting to the point now where he can't do that as often as he could before or in the same way. And instead of like, he now is the point where you have to stop being a thrower and start being a pitcher, as they say.
But I don't think he's a thrower. I think he's a pitcher. I think at this point he's a he's a pitcher. This guy knows how to get people out. He knows how to pitch a game. We clearly can see that. But why? What is it, Chad? Please, can you explain to me why? Why does he not care about this? What is going on here?
I think he cares more about his mechanics than holding runners on base, which, you know, he obviously knows better than any of us how good or bad his mechanics are going and how much they carry him through a game. But the reality is his mechanics are unorthodox, to say the least. And obviously his dad has a big influence on that. And I think with his high leg kick and his deep ball release, you know, his arm really goes down before he fires it. I think that adds a good, you know, quarter, half second to his release. And that is the difference in a lot of these players, you know, stealing second base. And I mean, I can't speak for him, but I just wonder that, you know, he's probably had suggestions like, hey, you know, you should shorten your stride, you should shorten your release, anything to reduce the amount of time it takes you to deliver to pitch. But, you know, if that's going to sacrifice his ability to pitch out of the stretch, then he's like, screw that. That's fine if a guy wants to steal second. I'm not going to give up, you know, a couple miles on my fastball or whatever it is, mm-hmm. Or movement on my curveball.
Or control or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, so much of his ability is based on that particular motion, that his particular mechanics, because when you can always tell, like he would say, that whole period where he was having a couple of real stinker games, he said, well, you know, I'm stepping down like a foot to the left or like a half foot to the left, or I'm stepping down, you know, several inches to the left. My foot's turning a little on the landing. It's so precise the way that he throws that if it gets off by a little bit, he gets a kink in it. All of a sudden it's like it can really make the difference in his control. And so it makes sense not to change his windup. What I feel like he needs to work on personally is I think he needs to work on his actual pickoff throws. Like, I don't feel like he's got a very strong pickoff throw the way that a couple of our guys used to.
Yeah.
He has this tendency, like, he'll go for the pickoff throw and you see it coming and it's broadcasted, or it doesn't have the zip on it that a real fast pickoff throw does. That, like, hold him on throw, anybody want. You're like, you throw it over to the base, the guy gets back. It just kind of was like, well, that's cool. Glad we did this. Let's get together again sometime, guys.
Yeah, it's a little formality.
Personally, though, I don't think that a professional athlete, a pitcher at the major league level has an excuse to not develop something that's that important as a starting pitcher. I just don't think that you can. I think that at this point in his career, he's not a rookie anymore. It's not like there's no excuse at this point. Like, oh, but I have to do this. I have to do that. Like this, like, dude, you pitch at the highest level. Just learn this. You know what I mean? This is important. It wins and loses ball games. You know what I mean? And when the other guys who are on the Giants are out there and they're not getting run on like as crazy as you are, you have to notice it and you have to make that adjustment. So I feel like it's either going to keep him down for a long time and like he's never, you know what I mean? It's like it's one of those things where he's pitching himself into bad situations by doing that, you know, whereas suddenly a single is a 3-run mistake or a 2-run mistake, not, you know, just moving a guy over to third or something like that. I don't see how more of a deal isn't being made out of that. So,
well, here's one question for you too that I have. Do you think that having a Posey Stewart tandem next year as opposed to a Posey Whiteside or Whiteside Stewart tandem, do you think that changes it at all?
Well, I mean, it changes. Defensively, Posey is the best guy to give you a chance to throw somebody out. But if I'm Posey, I'm gonna talk to Tim and I'm gonna say, look, I'm now a leader of this team. You know, I've proven that I can be a leader of this team. I can't let you go out there and ignore runners. I can't. I just, as your catcher, I can't let you do it. So I really hope that Posey, you know, and there was like a lot of talk about how Timmy didn't like pitching to Posey. He missed his big old fat guy back there. And I feel like Posey needs to take leadership and say, look, dude, this isn't going to work for me anymore. You know, I mean, we put up with the fact that our catcher couldn't, you know, run, like, basically clogged up the bases for so long. Like, maybe he just let Timmy get away with this because he's like, hey, I got a glaring hole too, man. But at this point, no. I mean, when you're at the major league level and you're trying to win World Series and that's the expectation of your team, you really got to take everything seriously, you know, so.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to think that the Giants have offered the largest, arbitration offer in Major League history. And Lincecum's only, what, 500K short of Roger Clemens' arbitration request of $22 million back in 2005 with the Astros. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, the reality is the midpoint is 19 and a quarter. And, you know, we're paying Zito 19 this year, so I'll give Zito.
Yeah, all right, sure. How about if Zito donates like $5 million of his And just out of good faith, just a gesture of good faith, like, hey, look, keep me on. I'll pay the $5 million out of Lincecum's and
well, but the problem is, bench me. Keep me on isn't really a threat because it's kind of like, well, you know, if we let him go, we still owe him all that money.
Well, yeah, yeah. But he wants to pitch. The guy wants to pitch.
True, true.
So, well, what's the point of reference here is Cole Hamels, $15 million for 1 year.
That was this year's probably this yeah. year's highest arbitration ruling. So, or not ruling, but highest arbitration agreement so far. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the highest in history. I want to say the highest is like 15.5.
Okay, that's the highest that's actually happened, right? That's the highest that's actually come out of arbitration, and that number was agreed upon?
Well, there was no arbitration hearing. This was also one of those agreements.
So the hope right now is that they don't even go to arbitration, that they just find, and right. this is what actually happened last time too, right? Yeah. Like they went to arbitration, and then in the room while they were waiting for the arbitration, you know, the people to come in and actually run the meeting, they made a deal. So they didn't even get to the hearing.
When you get with the arbitration hearings, like for those people who don't know how this works, nobody wants to go through an arbitration hearing. A team doesn't really want to go through an arbitration hearing. A player doesn't want to go through an arbitration hearing. Because what you do is you have one figure that the player and the player's camp, like, you know, Lincecum and Rick Thurman, are standing on one side saying, well, we demand $21.5 million. And the Giants stand on the other side and say, we are willing to give $17 million. And there is no agreement here. There's an arbiter who's brought in who says either you're this or you're this. I agree with the player or I agree with the team. One person gets awarded that amount. So it's either going to be 21.5 or 17 million. The midpoint doesn't matter what the midpoint is. Nobody cares at this point once you're in the hearing. And all you really sit there and you do is you sling mud. You say, oh, well, on the one hand, Lincecum says, well, hey, look, I've led the league in strikeouts this many times. The last year I did this well, this many things went properly. The Giants gave me no run support. I mean, you sit there and you sling. And he says, I deserve $21.5 million. And the Giants stand on the other side and they say, well, you know, he's been arrested before. He's caused us bad press.
So the point is,
we're pretty sure he's going to hurt himself.
Yeah. So the point is that they end up hating each other by the end of it. Right.
It's a horrible way to start off your season. Like, you come into spring training and the guy's sitting there going, man, I was sitting here and right there on the other side is Larry Bayer saying that he, you know, doesn't trust me not to snap myself in half on a weird throw.
Yeah,
sometime
it drives
when
the stake
I'm like
between the
eight,
two.
You
yeah,
know?
No, definitely, definitely. And you know, I think that Lincecum likes pitching here. I think the Giants like Lincecum. I feel like, you know, chances are pretty good. The thing is, Lincecum's got one of those weird attitudes about things where he doesn't want the long-term deal. He's said that, you know, he said, I don't really want like a 5-year deal. I want 1 year because I don't know what I'm going to feel like next year, you know, and it's kind of funny that he's like one of the only people who's like that. Most players, they want the long-term deal because they don't know if they're going to get hurt. They don't know.
They
if
want
this
security,
is
yeah. But I don't know. If you want, on the one hand, Lincecum's got all the confidence, he won't get hurt. But sometimes I kind of wish more pitchers would do that. You know?
Yeah. So Ben, you had a question for us. What's going on here?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was asking this last week because the Rockies actually signed Jason Kubel, and Kubel he's a mashing corner outfielder kind of guy. He kind of switched between outfield and DH and first for the Twins previously, and he's a guy that I kind of want. How does he fit into the Rockies? Because they got a lot of really talented guys out there, especially guys like Carlos Gonzalez. You know, you can't really move somebody like Cargo for Kubel because Cargo's defense and his offense are both, you know, really, they really excel. And the Rockies actually answered that for us over the course of this week. They traded with Oakland. They traded for Guillermo Moscoso and Josh Outman, two guys that really kind of played their way out of the A's rotation a couple times. Outman sort of came up, did his thing, had sort of that Ryan Sadowski moment for them, and then kind of went back down again. And they traded for Seth Smith, who you guys might remember. Seth Smith came out here and killed us a couple of times. I mean, Smith is really, he's a decent leadoff guy when he needs to be. He's a really talented prospect, and it's just kind of like the A's made out like bandits, I feel like, because that's how Kubel fits in. Is you trade Seth Smith, now you've got room to put somebody else in the outfield, and maybe Kubel's got some more power. But overall, like, I really feel like I don't know what exactly the Rockies think they were doing here.
Well, I thought actually Kubel signed with the Diamondbacks.
I thought it was the Diamondbacks.
Was that the Diamondbacks?
Yeah.
Did I just totally get all that wrong? Why
did I think, yeah, 2 years, something like that with the Diamondbacks, which...
Am I thinking of somebody else? Oh, man.
Like
no, Kadire. Kadire, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Kadire, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
Kadire. Who's he's considerably more talented than Jason Kubel in certain areas.
But, but that's why I think that Smith.
I was wondering why, when I was saying it, the question of where does Kubel fit in seemed a lot dumber as I was talking. All right. Man.
Well, I think Kadir makes the Rockies a much more dangerous team.
Agreed.
But to be honest, like, send everybody to the A's. I don't care. They're just, like, please go for it. Anybody you want, give them to the A's. A's make out like bandits. I think that's fine with me because I really don't care about the A's.
I'm not complaining. I'd rather face Moscoso and Outman than, you know, with the Rockies than with the A's because we're going to see them a lot more often. Frankly, I don't feel too bad about that. But the fact that, like, you're giving up somebody like Seth Smith, who I think was a pretty decent prospect and later player for them, yeah. I feel kind of – that trade, if I'm a Rockies player, that trade leaves kind of a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
If I'm an A's player, though, I'm tasting strawberry Kool-Aid right now. I mean, come on.
Yeah. To be honest, like I kind of black out my – whenever I see anything about the A's, I just don't even look at it or read it or care about it. So I have no idea even who they have. I know they got Coco Crisp. But that's it. That's
they
all.
They made a movie about Mike's, him too. Mike's gonna be upset when he listens.
Yeah, that's all. I think I've told the story about the guy I used to work with who would we'd all be standing around talking about the Giants at like the water cooler. He'd come and be like, "Hey, so the A's won." We'd be like, "Yeah, whatever." Nobody even noticed. Did you guys kind of get like pissed off that a baseball movie that was that good was about the A's, Moneyball?
At least it wasn't about the Yankees or the Dodgers.
I guess that's true, yeah.
Did anybody see that? I think I talked about this on the show, too. Somebody made an ad for the Yankees called Too Much Moneyball.
Too Much Moneyball? Yeah. That's the sequel.
Got all this money. What are we going to do with all this money?
That's the sequel. Let's talk about, you know what? We're actually kind of getting to the point where we got to start wrapping up here. We got to talk about our favorite guys and stuff. Let's see here. Where are we at? Oh, yeah. It's time. All right. Do we have favorite guys? I think, Chad, you had a favorite guy, right?
Yeah, this week, you know, I follow most of the Giants. Not all of them, I don't think. I probably haven't scoured the whole internet for him.
Buster Posey, by the way, just joined Twitter.
Because I do follow him on Facebook, but yeah, I didn't realize that he joined Twitter.
He said that it's my camp that's tweeting for me.
That's never as good. It's like Lincecum. Lincecum is like his team.
Yeah, and it's all about, it's always about friggin', it's always about Red Bull. Like,
yeah, it's a Red Bull. Check out this Red Bull cap and video. And
yeah, I don't even Red follow Lincecum, to be honest. I'd rather follow guys like Deshaun Goldson from the Eagles just because you can't even figure out what he's saying sometimes. You sit there and you try to read it. You're like, I'm sure that's English, but it ain't my kind. So I'm really confused.
So yeah, Brandon Crawford tweeted earlier this week that he did beast mode yoga.
Hmm. Beast mode yoga.
Yeah, I you know, I'm familiar with beast mode and I'm familiar with yoga, and yoga is very difficult. I can attest to that. But beast mode yoga, I'm not really sure if you're like grunting or, you know, you got the antlers up while you're doing downward dog. I'm not really sure.
Is that something like Bikram yoga?
Maybe that is. Yeah.
Bikram yoga in like a room with like a lava pit.
I think beast mode yoga is when they fire live rounds of ammunition over the top of you while you do your yoga poses.
Yeah, so it's not just like 99 degrees in your
right. No, you have to bend 99 degrees or you're going to get hit.
Here's what Urban Dictionary says about beast mode. That's a hype, energetic, outgoing, wilding out state of mind. So that's what they were doing. They were wilding out.
Yeah,
well, you know, that's
just not really like that, but that's okay.
I'm not sure that that's how meditating works, but I could be wrong.
It's hard to wild out while doing yoga.
In fairness, I'm not a major league level shortstop, so I guess I don't really know.
Hey, I know these guys need to be flexible. It's not that yoga isn't good for him. It's just I can't help but having that picture in my head of not just him. That's fine. He's doing yoga with his girlfriend or wife or whatever or trainer. But he did it with Sergio Romo, Eric Sirkamp, Culberson, and Gary Brown. And I'm just thinking of these five guys in like – not tights, but that's just what comes into my mind.
Yeah, no. Yoga, probably tights, yeah.
Probably like, you know, tank top or something.
I think they're all just wearing jock straps and nothing else. And then they're in there.
Willie, I'm not asking what's going through your head for beast mode in that case. I just don't want to know.
And then they just had a lot of like hard
wrong
high
kind
fives.
Of beast, buddy. Wrong.
A lot
kind
of hard high fives going on in there.
Willie, yeah, that's not how you do downward dogs,
basically.
Every time they're like, dude, I just did the S. Oh, sorry. I don't want to swear on this show, although that was so
totally
natural
this
to me to say something that I don't want to say on the show. We have a clean tag, don't we? I feel like we do. Do we have a clean? I'm going to look it up right now. I feel like we have a clean tag.
S obviously yeah, stood for salute to the sun. Come on, that's it seemed pretty obvious to me.
Like, yeah, I just did the out of that downward dog. High five me, bro. Beast mode,
F out of that downward dog.
Exactly. That's what was going on.
I just warrior posed so hard.
You guys, did you guys see that? Just see how hard my downward dog was. I wish I knew other yoga poses that I could say like for this joke, but I can't. I have no other references.
Anyway, that's probably the dirtiest pose name that you can come up with.
It really is.
There's a couple of bad ones, but like saying something like lotus pose is not as bad as saying downward dog.
That's true. That's true.
We apologize to any 5-year-olds listening to this podcast.
I do appreciate his candor in tweeting that Major League Baseball players do get together and do yoga together. So that was good.
That's pretty good.
We talked about Huff doing Pilates last week. We're talking about Crawford doing yoga this week. What comes next?
Let's see. How about
Pablo Sandoval doing an elliptical?
Just deep meditation. I think Pablo and his deep meditation.
My question is, who is it going to be? Who's going to try out meditate? You think it's Pablo or?
No, I think Angel Pagan in designer jeans with no shirt on. He's going to follow. I mean, he's pretty much Torres anyway, right?
So there you go.
Yeah.
So he's going to be throwing. He'll be throwing cinder blocks.
Cinder blocks and meditating all at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I went to the World Series parade, a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I was right up there in the front on Market Street. And, you know, here comes a cable car. And there's this tiny little Hispanic guy that comes out. And he's got the tightest jeans, cowboy boots, and this wife beater on with, like, jewels everywhere. And I'm like, oh, crap, that's Andrés Torres. And I was like, you fit right in here in San Francisco. I mean, it was like super metro, but
he wears the finest in metrosexual douche attire. He really does. Yeah.
It's funny because he's just not douchey enough to wear those, and he's
not a douche at all.
Anyway.
He's so nice, and he's such a nice guy.
You know what it is? He's on a team with Pat Burrell and Brian Wilson and Sergio, guys who like go to the marina to hang out. I mean, come on.
When they hit the club, you know the girls they bejazzled. Wife beaters.
Yeah, he looked like he was ready to go to a club, but it was 10 in the morning in San Francisco. And I was like, okay, you got to wait another 12 hours here.
The parade was hopping kind of the same way. I figure it's not that different.
No, there's a lot of hooking up going on at that parade. All right, let's hate some people. Let's see. Chad, why don't you go ahead and start, and then I'll just copy you.
I think it's pretty obvious to any Niner fans out there, but not once but twice you muffed a punt, Mr. Kyle Williams. I feel very sorry for you and your NFL career, because we all have bad days at work, but usually our days at work are not televised to 200 million people worldwide. Yeah. So my hat's off to you. I feel sorry for you. But you are definitely a guy we should hate right now.
Exactly. And here's the thing. I'm gonna build on that. I'm going to say for tonight, let's hate Kyle Williams and what
happened.
Maybe
tomorrow, depending on how we wake up.
And let's let go. Tomorrow, let's beast mode some yoga and let's let go. and
let's
actually
some cinder blocks.
more than I hate Kyle Williams right now, I hate people who are asking for him to get hurt.
Yes.
So let's not do that. Let's all be a little bit more classy than that if we can. I'll admit I made some jokes on Facebook because a friend of mine posted something that said, let me see if I can find it. He posted something that said me and 28 of my friends posted about Kyle Williams, right? Because you know how like Facebook will break it down now,
right?
And like say like, oh, everyone's posting about this. So he posted, me and 28 other friends posted about Kyle Williams. I posted, Kyle Williams posted about firearm purchases, bulk Kleenex, pain relievers, lawyers who handle wills, and suicide. my joke is like that Kyle Williams is depressed. Not that I want him to feel that way, but that, but there's a difference between that and posting like somebody posted something like, I hope he walks in front of a bus or something. It's just like, come on, guys.
That's like, not really? Even like if you're going to not be classy, at least be witty.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
At least be funny. Totally. Anyway, gotta feel sorry for the guy. Tonight I'm gonna hate him. Tomorrow I'm gonna beast mode some yoga and let it go.
Well, I thought cundiff was gonna be a curse word in Baltimore, but I'm sorry, Williams is more of a curse word in San Francisco.
It's even worse, Two mistakes.
Yeah.
Two mistakes always beats one. Ben, what you got?
I'm gonna go into more of this on the site sometime soon. I'm hoping to write a post about it, so I won't take a ton of time. But I hate people who yell at bandwagon fans. Like, if you're just going to turn around and call somebody bandwagon because the Niners are winning this year, that doesn't really like half the time you're wrong. And it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's not classy and it doesn't do anything for your team's fan base.
No, it doesn't. And but, I don't like people who hate on other people because they're not a fan in the same way you are. Like, does it really matter that someone else is not as big of a fan as you are? Do we need to like get on your case about that? Like, just be a fan the way you like to be a fan. Don't get mad at other people because they're not big enough fans for you. You know what I mean? That's just weird. I don't get that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to write a little more about this on the site. I'm going to try and actually post a blog that isn't written by Chad for once. No,
see what except I can do. For a Boston Red Sox fan circa 2004.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. The Boston Red Sox fans can suck it. Yeah. Get out of my face. All right. So we don't need to go too deep into the why we win at all, but I just want to outline what the potential lineup might be right now. And what I would pencil in if I was Bruce Bochy and how this is better than what we've had last year. So if everybody stays healthy, our lineup will be Pagan, Sanchez, Panda, Posey, Huff, Moki Cabrera, Sheerholtz, Crawford in the eighth spot, and then our pitcher. That's definitely a better lineup than we had at the end of the year last year. By the end of the year last year,
we had the complete lineup of the Fresno Grizzlies.
Yeah, I mean, by the end of the year, it was bad. But I'm just saying, like, if that lineup could stay together, that definitely scores a run more per game, I think, than what we had last year. And last year was historically bad, obviously. But one more run a game is all we need. That's all I'm asking for. We know how bad it can be now, so... And I felt like we said this the year before, can't get any worse, right? Even though we won a World Series with it. We're like, it can't get any worse, right? The offense can't. And then it did.
It did.
And then it did. But this is definitely better.
Which is sad because, frankly, the pitching rotation got better.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm praying, please, health. We need health this year is what we need.
Yeah.
I'm going to do my Beast Mode Yoga Rain Dance for health. And if we could just keep all these guys together, I think this lineup is a serviceable lineup with the pitching staff we have. To at least get in the playoffs, and then, of course, as we always say, then anything can happen, right?
Yeah, we just got to put bubble wrap around Freddie Sanchez and Buster Posey.
Yeah, true.
Because with those two guys, you still look back to last year, they finished four games out, and there's no reason I don't believe that if those two guys were healthy for the entire year, that would have easily made up those four games. But
no, I think so.
It's conjecture.
Yeah,
who knows?
At this point, there's no way to say. Yeah,
I'll say this.
Posey, if you have a play at the plate, I want you not to do a weird diving backward thing towards, because that really, as much as that was like the way you're supposed to do it apparently these days, right? You're not supposed to take the hit. He was not in a good position, and how about this? Let's have Huff on a play at the plate. Huff, you run to the plate, and you do the play. And let Posey back you up. Well, the pitcher runs first.
We established that Huff is kind of the Iron Man of the team anyway. Yeah, he takes a lick and keeps on with him.
This is called the Posey play at the plate rotation. So basically, Huff runs to the plate. Posey backs him up like what the pitcher is supposed to do, and the pitcher goes to first.
That's
what I think we need to be
perfect.
Doing. All right, see, it works. All right,
I got an idea. Okay, so on a play at the plate like that, Posey goes to backup, the pitcher goes to first, and then we get Justin Smith from the Niners to come in and cover the plate.
Yes, I dig that.
Justin Smith
is a beast.
He'll reach over the umpire.
reach over the umpire and destroy somebody. All right, so that's going to do it for this episode of TortureCast. I want to thank Chad for joining us, and we're very excited to have you on. We'll be trying to do episodes again every week, getting right back into the swing of the season. And I'm really excited for 2012 here. I think it's going to be a fantastic year. Missing the playoffs last year was a brutal blow, but I think this is the year we're coming back. And I'm excited to talk to you all season about the Giants. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you, guys. This is a lot of fun, and it's a good excuse to keep up on the Giants.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Ben, of course, welcome back for another year. Hopefully we'll get Mike G in here as well, and we'll have more activity on the site also. But, of course, if you want to email us, you can do it. Do we have mail@torturecast.com yet?
It is mail@torturecast.com.
Mail@torturecast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. We're @torturecast. You can like us on Facebook. You can follow us individually, @ChadK21. Or @FriedDuck, or I am @WillyDills. So go ahead and do that as well. Follow us individually because we all tweet about the Giants. But definitely do all those things. Let us know anything you want to say. Like us on Facebook. Give us 5-star reviews on iTunes. All that stuff. Be fans. Get engaged. because we want to keep bringing the content to you guys, and we get more pumped up the more you guys get pumped up listening to it. So again, we'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening to TortureCast, and talk to you later. Boom.
The loveliness of Paris seems somehow sadly gay. The glory that was Rome is of another day. I've been terribly alone and forgotten in Manhattan. I'm going home to my city by the bay. I left my heart in San Francisco. High on a hill, it calls to me to be where little cable cars climb halfway to the stars. The morning fog may chill the air. I don't care. My love waits there in San Francisco. Above the blue and windy sea, when I come home to you, San Francisco, your golden sun.
Thank you to everybody for listening again to the TortureCast, the podcast about the San Francisco Giants by and for the fans. If you'd like to participate, you can do so by following us on Twitter. We are at TortureCast. Of course, you can always email us, torturecast@gmail.com. For Ben Lee, Mikey G, my name is Willie Dills, saying we'll see you next time. Home, baby.